Now back to The Caring Generation on 630 KHOW with Pamela Wilson, the care navigator.
Navigator, you're with me on The Caring Generation, the only program of its kind, caring to make your life easier by tackling uncomfortable and intimidating discussions about aging, caregiving, and everything in between. Through my company, The Care Navigator, I meet with individuals and families about care needs, whether it's an unexpected change in health, a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, or just aging. We help those with loved ones at home, in care communities, nursing homes, or in the hospital. If you need care or are in a caregiving situation, not sure what to do, not sure what options are available, call me and I'll help you sort through the issues. 303-205-7877, 303-205-7877. You can also send an email to info@thecarenavigator.com. Dr. Michael Gordon, professor of medicine in the Division of Geriatrics at the University of Toronto Medical Program, is also director of palliative care and former vice president of medical services and head of geriatrics and internal medicine at Toronto's Baycrest Geriatric Health System. Dr. Gordon holds Canada's first certificate issued by the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons in the field of geriatric medicine. He was born in Brooklyn, New York, and has written a book called Moments That Matter, Cases in Ethical Elder Care. Dr. Gordon, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
A lot of medical professionals suggest that people don't have CPR because I think they know more than the general consumer. What's it really like to have CPR, to perform CPR on a body?
Well, it's a pretty brutal undertaking. First of all, the person is supposed to be on a flat surface. So if they're on a bed that's soft, that either means putting a board underneath the bed or often putting the person on the floor. So that means a rapid movement from a bed to a floor in somebody who's at this point unconscious. And then you have a number of things going on simultaneously. They put on an electrical defibrillator that reads the rhythm and then decides whether it should be shocked. But in the meanwhile, somebody's compressing the chest very, very frequently to try to keep the circulation going while the rest of the things are going on. Now, in older people, those compressions can result in damage, including broken ribs. And the other thing is somebody usually undertakes respiration, usually with an ambu bag, an artificial respirator, to keep oxygen going into the lungs. But it's the compression of the chest that's the real force. And that can be, now the person's unconscious, you can say, well, they don't feel it. Of course, we don't know whether they feel it or not, because very few people really survive. But if they've suffered broken ribs as part of it, and they do survive even for a short period, the assumption is that would be a painful experience.
Are there any statistics on the percentage of family or decision makers who absolutely insist that their loved one has to have CPR?
You know, I don't know what kind of statistics there are, and I don't think that would be an easy statistic to get. It would have to be part of a study, and I'm not aware. But in my own experience, there are many families who are reluctant to provide a DNR order because they somehow believe, often erroneously, that if they don't provide if they do provide a DNR order, they are somehow participating in the death of their loved one. And I've heard people say, I can't be responsible for, in quotes, killing my mother. Now, that's an unfortunate formulation of what's happening, because what's happening is death is occurring. CPR as an intervention rarely prevents it from happening in older, frail people, especially those who require nursing home support in order to live and have dementia and other medical problems. So it's not as if by not doing CPR, you're participating in killing them. All you're doing is using a technology which really wasn't meant for that, as you might say, the last hurrah. And I think that's a terrible thing to expose people to, especially when it most of the time doesn't work.
Do families want that more just because they're uneducated about the chronic disease the person has or the likelihood of success?
I think it's a combination. One part is education. In other words, most people don't really know. The information they have or the observations they've had are mostly from the media, and the media represents things in a way that's useful for the media or for the story, but doesn't necessarily represent reality. There have been some very good programs that do represent the realities of CPR, but they're not readily available. There is a literature. Sometimes it's in the lay press, but most of it's in the professional press. For example, I've written extensively for years because of my own career interests as a geriatrician, but also my interests as an ethicist. And my writings have focused on CPR for many years, also in the books I've written. And I try to get people to understand the reality is the success rate in elderly frail people. I tell them it's as close to zero as you can get without being zero. So part of it's knowledge information. The other part is guilt, i.e. people say, I can't be responsible for, in quotes, my mother's death, as if by not providing CPR, the responsibility goes to them for not doing something. And then there's another group of people for which either their interpretation of the religion, depending on the religion, of which there are many religions that may interpret this, or their duties from the point of view of religion, is that you must do this to fulfill your religious obligations. Now, most of the religions that have sort of sanctity of life as part of it do have an allowance when undertaking something is not going to be helpful, when we would say it's futile. But you have to be very sophisticated to understand the differences. And unfortunately, these events happen very quickly, so one can't deliberate them. And therefore, you do the natural, in quotes, thing, which is you try to save the person because you believe that's what you're told to do religiously. And the fact that it doesn't work, at the end you say, well, I did everything possible. So that helps assuage guilt and bad feelings and all these other things. And I think it's unfortunate because it ends up providing something that really does not help the person. And I believe is almost as close to an assault as you can get without it being an assault in the sense of criminal.
Older people or caregivers of older people, how do they decide? Are there any kind of guidelines to help them make a decision whether to say yes or no to CPR?
Well, I think it's really looking at the burden of illness, the kind of conditions that exist, and again, your own values, what their quality of life is, and say, is this something that I believe I would like to maintain? But people should actually ask the person. Most of us have a pretty good idea about what we want in life. And I find that when I speak to people who are still able to discuss and I explain, they look at me like I'm crazy that anybody would want that. Like they say, why would anybody want that? Especially when the likelihood of survival is so low. Most people say, I'd like to die comfortably without heroics. That's not what people want, especially when they are led to understand and they're have it explained to them that, one, the chances of survival are not very good. You're not going to be better than you were before. In fact, the likelihood is you'll be somewhat worse because even when it's done relatively quickly, there is a period in which the oxygenation to the brain is compromised, so it can't be good for you. So even if you manage to get the heart going, you've often lost something else, and the survival's extremely dismal. So, you know, most people, if given time to think about it and have it explained to them properly, will probably reject it. And it should be done not in a crisis, because in a crisis, people often say, do whatever you can.
You're right. Dr. Gordon, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think that the conversations really do have to occur, and they should occur when people can soberly look at things, think of their life, think of their values. If they have certain principles that are important to them, they obviously have to be taken into consideration. But the conversation should include those who understand what it really means. Most physicians do understand. People who've had the experience of it, as I have, understand that really it's a pretty brutal undertaking and the outcomes are so poor. I would hope that most people are not exposed to it, other than those for whom there really is a good chance of recovery, and that's relatively young people in an aberration situation, an intercurrent event in a situation where they're otherwise relatively well and functioning.
Dr. Gordon, I thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
Listeners, if you have questions about your DNR, make sure that you talk to your doctor and know that a do not resuscitate is different from a living will. A do not resuscitate is a document that takes its place when a human stops beating, so there's no heartbeat and they're not breathing. A living will is a document that states what you want done toward end of life when you're unconscious, but your heart is still beating and you are still breathing. Our caring controversy of the week, you're one of four children caring for your parents. One of your brothers drives you absolutely crazy. He seems to interfere in everything, making more work for you. You're so angry that you can barely speak to him. What now? To give your opinion, visit our website, thecaringgeneration.com. Click on As Heard On and then Caring Controversy. We'll talk about this in the last segment of this hour. I'm Pamela Wilson, the Care Navigator on Talk Radio 630 KHOW. You're with me on The Caring Generation, navigating life's transitions with dignity, clarity, and stability. Our program is not limited by time zone or location. Your out-of-town friends, family members, and loved ones can listen each week by visiting KHOW.com and clicking on the Listen Live button. Up next, if you think making a decision about a Do Not Resuscitate document might be challenging, what decision would you make about artificial nutrition? Dr. William Toffler, co-founder and National Director of Physicians for Compassionate Care Education Foundation, joins us to help you answer that question.